Lo traga si se lo traga la tierra. Si se quedó sin gasolina, si lo atracaron en la esquina, si le clavaron hondo en el alma una espina. Ay, si se pone peluda la cosa, recuerde la vida.
Great to be with you. I'm Leo Gold, your host. A pleasure to be with you. I'm coming to you, amazingly enough, from Cape Cod, Massachusetts. The wonders of technology. We got me set up to do New Capital Show. It is great to be with you today. I hope you are having a terrific time. I miss Texas, and I'll be back soon in time for winter. 713-526-5738 is the number to call. 713-526-KPFT. We'll be taking your calls in just a few minutes, and the subject is what else? I mean, what else would the subject be at this time in our nation's history other than budget deficits and economics? Fascinating time to be talking about capital and the allocation of capital, which is what the New Capital Show is about, and I'm anxious to get your thoughts and opinions. Again, 713-526-KPFT. Our address on the web, newcapitalshow.com, and on Facebook, leogold.newcapitalshow. You can find me on Facebook at leogold.newcapitalshow. Feel free to friend me. I'll friend you back. The news off the New York Times just really a few minutes ago. Boehner and Obama close to deal, leaders are told. Boehner and Obama are close to a deal. It's going to take more than Boehner and Obama to get close to the deal, right? What's been the news over the last few weeks? That we've known that John Boehner was inclined to make a deal on this, you know, one of the, this grand deal. The president has this idea that there's that there might be time, the time might be right to make a grand deal. And there has been pretty accurate speculation that John Boehner was inclined to do the same as well. Whatever you think about John Boehner, the word about him is that he's more of a pragmatist. You know, he's not one of these fire-breathing Republican guys like lots and lots of other members of the House. And the problem, of course, is going to be whether John Boehner, who is the Speaker of the House of Representatives, the leader of the entire House of Representatives, if he is going to be able to bring along a radicalized Republican Party. New York Times reports Carl Hulse and Jackie Combs are reporting that the Obama administration has informed Democratic congressional leaders that President Obama and Speaker John Boehner were starting to close in on a major budget deal that would enact substantial spending cuts and seek future revenues through a tax overhaul. Congressional officials said Thursday. Of course, Republicans have been saying this, and when I say Republicans in general, what I'm really talking about are these House Republicans, have been saying that any increase whatsoever in revenues, meaning anything that brings in any incremental amount of revenue into the federal government, is verboten. Cannot be done. Will not be voted for. Cannot pass the House of Representatives. They will obstruct it. Right? Can you imagine if, oh, and by the way, they all are now going around signing pledges before they're elected, before they're inaugurated, and while they're serving. They're signing pledges. Now, Edmund Burke talked about this. Edmund Burke, a philosopher from, 18th century? Famous philosopher who talked about theories of government. Burke talked about this and talked about the purpose of an elected representative back in the 1700s. He said, and I'm going to paraphrase because I don't remember exactly the words that he used, but he basically said, it does us no good to elect somebody who has already made pledges, who has already committed to positions in a way that they are not able to take in new information, that they are not able to change opinion, to change votes, to do anything to react to incoming information that is different than might have come before. Right? Burke basically said these would be robots. And essentially, they would be contravening the democratic process, which calls upon people who are elected to parliamentary bodies to have discussions with each other, to make speeches to each other, to listen to each other, to be able to reason, to be able to persuade and to be persuaded. These are all part of an operating democracy. And so when representatives of a parliamentary democracy or congressional democracy or representative democracy begin to sign off pledges that their position is incontrovertibly taken, we've got big problems, and that's essentially what we've got right now. We have a Republican Party that has decided that it cannot take in any new incremental additional revenue to the federal government. Despite the fact that we've got massive budget deficits, many of which began to grow in magnitude and in problem when George W. Bush was elected, tax cuts were implemented, and military expenditures were increased. Those are the facts. And so that's where we stand with Republicans. Imagine if Democrats or liberals. I'm in Massachusetts right now, and there's a senator named Bernie Sanders who's an independent from the state of Vermont, just north of here. Imagine if anybody from that wing of American politics said, I am taking a pledge. I will sign no bill unless it includes spending on social programs. Imagine if such pledges were signed by Democrats and liberals. Imagine what you would hear. And yet, Republicans have signed off on something called the No Tax Pledge, put out by a Washington lobbyist named Grover Norquist. Some huge number, like 95% of Republicans, have signed this. We will not have any new taxes, not for anything. Edmund Burke, the great British philosopher, would have said this is a complete abdication of the duty of a representative. This is the problem that John Boehner faces. New York Times goes on, with the government staring at a potential default in less than 2 weeks, the official said the administration on Wednesday night notified top members of Congress that an agreement between the president and Mr. Boehner could be imminent. The congressional leaders whose help Mr. Obama would need to bring a compromise forward, and one assumes that means Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, other Democrats, they were told that the new revenue tied to the looming agreement to increase the debt limit by August 2nd would be produced in 2012 through a tax code rewrite that would lower individual and corporate rates, close loopholes, end tax breaks, and make other adjustments to produce revenue gains. Now, those of you who have been listening to the New Capital Show know that I'm good on doing away with those loopholes. I'd like to jump off from the New York Times piece reporting this potential agreement between the Speaker of the House and the President to a piece I really enjoyed from a guy named Ezra Klein. This appears in Bloomberg News just yesterday. He says, "My big tax break looks a lot like your big spending." Ezra Klein writes, "I spent time digging through the federal budget this week, and I concluded that Republicans are right. There is plenty of spending to cut. For instance, we've got one government program that hands people money to buy houses that in most cases they would buy anyway." You hear that? You hear Ezra Klein puts that. He says, "For instance, we've got one government program that hands people money to buy houses that in most cases they would buy anyway." What is he referring to? He's referring to the tax break, the deduction you get for mortgage interest on your home. And of course, that has been in the tax code, I don't know for how long, but a long time. Why should mortgage interest on a home be deductible? Totally discriminates against those of us who rent rather than buy homes. And it's the sort of thing that has done exactly the thing that resulted in a boom in residential home construction. Not just a boom, overconstruction, overallocation of capital. It's one of the reasons, not the only reason, but one of the reasons why we have built so damn many houses in this country. The mortgage tax deduction. Mortgage interest deduction. He goes on to say, people who use this deduction, and look, I'm one of them. I own a home, and I deduct my mortgage interest. But every time I do, I think, this is kind of weird. Why should I get a tax break because I have a mortgage? He says, you get even more money if you buy a more expensive house, right? Because then you're going to have a bigger loan. So the bigger the house you buy, the bigger the deduction you get. And what is the result here in this country? Huge, massive houses, especially where we live in Houston. Klein says, over the next 5 years, that program alone, the mortgage interest deduction, will cost $500 billion. It's $100 billion a year. So what Klein is saying is, don't talk to us about spending. Spending's only one side of it, right? The government is unilaterally turning away these revenues that would otherwise come in if they got rid of the mortgage interest deduction. Well, you know what Republicans are going to say? Well, that's new taxes if we get rid of the deduction. Klein goes on to say, another federal agency will spend more than $400 billion to reward people for making money by investing and earning capital gains and dividends, rather than by going to work and taking their income and wages. I like investors and I participate in the market, but is this really the sort of activity that requires a $400 billion subsidy? What Klein is talking about here, of course, are the incredibly low rates that are taxed for capital gains, for dividends, and which have been headed down for the last 20 years. Now, look, I agree that generally, if you want to cause investment capital to form, you don't want to tax investment capital too highly. But there is a segment of the investment world that has taken full advantage of this. You may have heard of hedge fund managers or private equity managers or venture capital managers. And in this case, those individuals have what's called a carried interest. Their investors invest in their funds, and if there's any profit that comes, and very often there is, and has been, the managers of these funds get to take 20% of the gains, even though they didn't put up the money for those gains. That's called the carried interest. And it is the reason, my friends, why who has gotten wealthy in the last 10, 20 years? Hedge fund managers, private equity managers, and venture capital managers. It's the reason why they have gotten so wealthy is the fact that carried interest is taxed so low, at such a low rate. Think about it. Firemen, policemen, nurses. Generally, the next dollar of income that they earn is taxed at a higher rate than our very wealthiest hedge fund managers. Their next dollar of income, firefighters I'm talking about, could be 25%. The next dollar of income taxed at 25%. What is it taxed at for hedge fund managers? 15%. So these are the types of things that I hope the president is negotiating in his discussions with Congressman Boehner, Speaker of the House Boehner. It sounds like they may be headed in that direction, but the question, of course, is will congressional Republicans, well, House Republicans, more specifically, be willing to go along with this deal? Again, what is being reported by the New York Times is that new revenue tied to the looming agreement to increase the debt limit by August 2nd would be produced in 2012 through a tax code rewrite that would lower individual and corporate rates, close loopholes, end tax breaks, and make other adjustments to produce revenue gains. The article goes on to say, officials knowledgeable about the conversations between the administration and congressional leaders said the details of the potential package remain unknown, but they presumed it would include cuts and adjustments in most federal programs, including Medicare. These are the areas, of course, where Republicans are going to demand their take. Cuts to Social Security, cuts to Medicare, reform. And I think most people agree that there may need to be adjustments made to these programs. People are living longer. Actuarial tables change all the time. But that is going to be the other side of any agreement that gets made. Again, none of this is clear as to whether it's going to actually lead to an agreement. And of course, in August, in early August, the U.S. is going to hit its debt limit, and there is the possibility that the U.S. will have a default on its debt, which, frankly, I don't think anybody really, really wants to see. Klein goes on to say, did you know that every time someone makes a charitable donation, the federal government transfers money into the donor's bank account? Supporting shelters and museums and Doctors Without Borders is a good deed and all, but is it really worth something that taxpayers should reward with more than $200 billion in cold hard cash? You may have filled out your Schedule A on your tax return before. That's where many of these itemized deductions lie. But, of course, there are deductions all over the place, not just for individuals in our country. There are deductions for corporations and companies. Boy, are there deductions that corporations and companies take. We have seen how companies continue to offshore jobs, how companies continue to build cash in their foreign subsidiaries from their operations, and then do not repatriate those earnings back into the United States, because to repatriate them would involve paying some tax. And rather than paying tax, and of course, there were articles in the New York Times a few months ago on General Electric, which is a master of this. General Electric has figured out how basically to pay, you know, no tax. It has an army, 1,000 people working to get it into the position where it pays no taxes. Unclear where all this is going to go, but it is safe to say that the country has got to do something to straighten out its tax code. Our tax code is one of the things that is plaguing us because it is directing investment. It is causing capital to be sent into areas in magnitudes, in quantities, that are simply causing overinvestment. When you have overinvestment in an area, you see lower returns. And that's exactly what happened in the housing area. Over the past couple of weeks, we've seen increasingly dismal job numbers. We've seen indications that the economy is beginning to slow again, even though, as I always want you to understand, and I always want to point out to you, you have to take with a grain of salt what the financial press says. When the financial press says the economy is slowing, yeah, maybe it's slowing some. But even with slowing, the United States economy will still transact upwards of $14 trillion in goods and services. It's an amount of economic activity that is simply amazing. So anytime you see that in the press, economy slowing, right? It's there to make you think, oh, well, everything's just come to a standstill. Everybody's going home and sitting on their hands, and that's it. $14 trillion. You know, we could lose a percent. I'm not saying we want to, but you could lose economic activity, and you still have a very, very large and active economy. The question for the United States economy going forward, and it's unclear whether we're going to get there, is whether the country is going to straighten out, yes, its tax problems, its tax code problems, its investment issues, and we are going to begin to place capital into projects that are going to yield real returns, not just to investors, but are also going to produce jobs. Unclear whether that's going to happen. 713-526-5738 is the number to call, 713-526-KPFT. I think we'll take a quick traffic and weather break with Doyle. And when we come back, we'll be taking your calls, 713-526-5738. Doyle, take it away, and let's let everybody know what they're facing this afternoon.
Hey, Leo, well, let's start with traffic. It's really hot out there, 104 degrees. And
oh, no, you're kidding me.
No, I'm sure not.
104 degrees?
104 degrees.
God.
And it looks like
the
rest of the week's going to be in the high 90s. And there's a 20% chance of precipitation throughout the week. As far as traffic is concerned, we've got a accident on 610 East Loop northbound at Clinton Drive, and it's got the 610 East Loop backed up. There's an accident, actually construction on 45 Gulf southbound at 1959 Dixie Farm Road, and it's got 45 South backed up over there by the Beltway. We just had an accident pop up on 45 South, right inside of the 610 loops, and it's got 45 all backed up as well. 45 North headed towards Beltway 8, the Woodlands is backed up going both ways. And over by the Galleria, there is a lot of traffic as well. So back to you, Leo.
Hey, Doyle.
Yes, sir.
Why is it so hot in Texas?
Because this is hell on earth, basically.
Come on.
Just joking.
Man. I just don't know how it can be that hot.
Well, we've got a lot of calls coming in, Leo. We got Scott on line one.
All right, let's go to Scott. Scott is going to be the first caller of the day. Again, 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT. Hey, Scott, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Okay. Last week, I kept calling the White House number, and I got busy signals all week. Finally got through the White House this past Monday. Told them I didn't want any cuts to Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid, and if there were any cuts, I wanted to be, then I wanted people to look at military spending.
You know, Scott, you and I have been talking for weeks now about what's going on with the military spending and the magnitude of it, and of all these discussions that they're having, what is going on, and why won't they put military cuts on the table? Do you think they will?
Well, I haven't heard of anything, but they're, of course, military spending is something of a sacred cow in Washington, and they do have a lot of political pull.
What do you think's going to be the situation if this deal with Boehner is announced and there's just nothing of any substance in cutting the military? I mean, it seems as if the country's in total psychological denial with an $800 billion military budget, could be even higher when you include the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and all the other funny business that goes on that's kind of, you know, military related. Could be, you know, now the CIA is really involved in military with drones, and the CIA is running the drone program. That probably doesn't even come under the Defense Department. Who knows? When is the country going to figure out that we are way overspending and overcommitting capital?
Well, I have certainly emphasized when I called my politicians, like Sheila Jackson Lee, both senators from Texas, the Speaker, also Ted Poe, because I'm going to be in his district due to redistricting.
Yep. Scott, and, great to have you. Thanks.
Yeah, in a lot of cases, like, I had to call in answering machines.
Scott, thanks for the call. Great to have you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Hey, Leo, we got John on line two whenever you need to get to him.
Okay, we'll get to John in just a second. Thanks, Doyle. I just want to get back to Ezra Klein for a second because his article goes on, and we've talked about these things all the time, but Klein says there's tons of this stuff. Our tax code is chock full of stuff. And, of course, we're not going to see probably too much cutting go on there. But he says the government pays employers $700 billion annually to offer health insurance to their employees, which no economist would say is a good idea. What he's referring to there is that when health insurance premiums are paid by employers, let's say that you work for a company that has an employer-sponsored health plan, and your employer pays premiums for your health care, the company gets to deduct that as an expense. And you do not have to declare it as a benefit. You don't have to declare it as income. And that's exactly why companies do this. That's exactly why we've gotten into the position over all these years where companies offer health insurance. Because rather than paying you salary, where you would have to declare it as income, they buy you health insurance. And the government, therefore, is deprived of revenue. This is a crazy system. Totally crazy system. Why should health insurance be deductible? You know, property and casualty insurance is not deductible. Life insurance premium payments are not deductible. I don't know any other, though there probably are, insurance premiums that are deductible from federal income taxes. And yet health insurance is. And the reason simply is because it goes back to the 1950s, and somebody in the IRS at that time rendered a ruling that said that they could be deducted. And since then, what do we have in this country? An absence of any kind of national health care program. And huge deficits being run, in part contributed to by health care insurance deductions. Okay, let's go to John next on line two. John, welcome to the New Capital Show. John, you there?
Hello?
Hey, John. John, go ahead. You're on.
Hey, can you hear me?
You're good.
All right. Leo, for once, I think I disagree with you here. I mean, If all your notion is to say that we can fix our deficit problems by eroding things like deducting interest payment on our mortgages, why would you keep on attacking? That's the middle class one more time being attacked. Why is it that, like the first caller first mentioned, the real problem of the political problem is there's too much military spending and other areas that can be clipped. When you start talking about the mortgages we pay for and the interest that we draw from paying for that mortgage, I don't think that's fair.
John, the reason I'm in favor of it is I'm in favor of cleaning up the whole tax code. If that's the only thing that is dropped, yes, I'm not in favor of it. But I think that our tax code has gotten so convoluted, and there are deductions for everything. Everyone has sent their lobbyist into Washington over the last 50 years, or you know, 75 years, whenever the income tax was instituted, I guess in the early part of the 20th century, that it doesn't do what it's supposed to do, which is to get the government revenue and leave some sort of level playing field in the economy. I understand what you're saying, and I'm sympathetic to it. And that unto itself, getting rid of the mortgage interest deduction alone, you're right, I would not be in favor of that. But I would be in favor of it if it came with an entire across-the-board revamping of the tax code. Now, that may not be possible because, you know, even taxing income is going to be is going to have its own biases. But
right,
to me, all of these different deductions that have worked their way in are now working against us. And the mortgage interest deduction, it doesn't just help the middle class, but it also helps mortgage bankers, and it helps banks, and it helps construction companies. And I've got nothing against those guys either. It's just that they don't need a leg up. We need to be building the right number of houses. People need to be purchasing the right number of houses. People need to be buying the right size houses. And the thing has gotten so skewed from what it ought to be that that's the reason that ultimately I would be in favor of getting rid of that deduction if it
right.
came with a whole package of other things.
Right. I mean, the real problem, I think, going on in the country is we've come to a point where we can't solve anything. We can't solve our tax code. We can't solve our immigration problems. We can't solve the military spending. We can barely sit down and talk because of, I don't know what it is going on in the country, but it's as if one party wants to totally rule making
fiat.
Sure that the next party does not succeed. When did somebody succeed become somebody's liability? It's as if I don't care what happens to you as long as you fail, I win. What happened to that? I mean, the country has been reduced to garbage.
Well, I hear you, but we are a lot farther along than we were 10 years ago. 10 years ago, everyone was in denial about our problems, right? I mean, think back to the triumphalism of George W. Bush and the tax cuts that they put through and the military spending that that ensued from September 11th. At that point, those of us listening to our beloved station KPFT, we understood that this was going to have disastrous consequences. The good news is that now you've got Republicans and Tea Partiers and so forth who agree we've got problems. Now, we don't agree on the solutions, but at least now they're not running around, you know, screaming rah, 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 there's no problems. So it's not all bad news. We're in the process of working these issues out. You and I know they're not going to be all worked out to your satisfaction and my satisfaction. But at the very least, we're starting to see all sorts of conversations around things like, why do we have this as a deduction? Why are employers able to deduct healthcare premiums? Why are companies able to deduct, you know, this? Why are companies able to avoid taxes? We're starting to focus on the issues. That's the good news. I agree with you. We're not in agreement yet. It's going to take more time.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Right. But now that brings me back to the next to last week's topic when we were talking about the nuclear reactors in Germany having to do away with facing out all their nuclear reactors and starting to go on green energy. Why is it that such a country, like I was asking you, they can actually see in the future and say, you know what, this thing is not sustainable. Let's start changing our ways and get for the better for the future of Germany. But why is it in our country we've come to a stage, it's either my way or the highway?
Well, I don't think we have my way or the highway. I just think we have various interests. It's a very big country, and there, you know, I'm in Massachusetts right now, which has a certain history. It has a certain set of natural resources. It has a certain set of strengths and human capital. And my home is Texas, which has a totally different profile. And it's going to take the country, as you point out, coming together to sort out these issues. And not everyone is going to agree because people have different material interests, different economic interests. But that's why it's really, really important that we get honest accounting. If we have honest accounting in our tax code, if we have honest accounting in our regulations, we have a much better chance of getting there than if we have lies. And we shouldn't have lies.
Could you explain to me how is it that we're able to go to a war without actually paying for it? How does that work?
because we borrowed the money, and that's been done before. I mean, it's not the United States that was the first to do that. You know, you've had countries for millennia that have waged war and had to borrow money to do it and wound up in trouble. I mean, famously Napoleon, right? Napoleon broke the French bank, waging war all over his part of the world, and ended up having to sell French territory in North America, also known as the Louisiana Purchase, to Thomas Jefferson. I don't remember what the number was on that. I think it was, I don't know, $10 million or $15 million to buy all of the what was known as the Louisiana Territory. Of course, Native Americans had no say in it whatsoever, but that's history. So I agree with you, but it's not the first time that countries have waged war and not paid for it. And in the 1960s, we waged war in Vietnam, and we paid for it with the inflation of the U.S. dollar. We paid for it. Say it again,
John. A lot of people in the Tea Party, they're saying that Obama should not raise the debt limit because that's going to add more deficit, not understanding that the money is already used.
That's right. You're correct.
But
John, great to have you.
That.
Great to have you. Thanks for the call, John. And I'm going to move along. 713-526-5738. We're about halfway through New Capital Show. We are talking about the budget deficit and the deficits and budgets. We are talking about the budget ceiling, the debt ceiling on the United States Treasury and capital allocation in the United States in general. 713-526-5738. It's the New Capital Show. I am Leo Gold, your host, coming to you from Cape Cod, Massachusetts, where it is not 104, although I think we have a heat wave coming this way. And it's great to be with you. I hope everybody in Texas is doing great. Next up is going to be Mike, who is holding on line 3. Mike, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hey, thanks, Leo, for taking my call.
My
question is more on the last part about capital allocation. I'd be interested to hear your comments on this. You know, if you look at investments from a mile-high view, just the word, it seems to me that, you know, if you have capital to invest, you should be able to buy into a company that you believe in or start a company you believe in. Or if you want to support local or state or federal government, you can buy bonds. Or you can buy a commodity like gold or real estate or, you know, anything like that. But where did we come up with the idea that I can bet your company is going to fail? That just doesn't seem like an investment to me, shorting a stock. And even futures bother me, and derivatives and hedge funds. I mean, how much capital are we wasting in this casino-like environment instead of real investments that bring growth and bring jobs? And I'd love to hear your comments on that.
Well, it's a great observation, Mike. You know, we've had an awful lot of financial innovation over the last 30 years, really beginning it didn't begin in 1970, but it really accelerated in 1970 with the deregulation of financial markets that took place, and really the big year for that was 1973. And we have seen the growth in derivatives. Among that category of investments, options, and that was really helped along by the what's called the Black-Scholes model. The Black-Scholes model was the first model that allowed an investor to price an option accurately. And so it's not for me to say that these instruments should not be in use. I think that there is a place for these types of investments. They help to impound, Mike, price into assets, including shorting stocks. If we didn't have the ability to short stocks, then we wouldn't have the ability to get a more accurate price on stocks. To me, the big problem that's occurred in the last few years were the bailouts of banks and the bailouts of other financial institutions by the federal government. And what we're seeing both here and in Europe is the result of that. What we're seeing is that the governments themselves have had to increase the size of their balance sheets, and now the governments themselves are facing what may be a sovereign debt crisis. You know, as the U.S. is bumping up against its limits, and the Federal Reserve, which of course could certainly get even bigger if it wanted to, but essentially there are those who say the Federal Reserve's balance sheet has gotten big enough. But essentially, the big problem has been the socialization of losses, the socialization of private risk, which is what occurred in 2008 when it exploded into the public consciousness as bank after bank, financial institution after financial institution was bailed out, taken off the hook. The shareholders were saved in some cases. In other cases, the shareholders were let go. But as Sheila Bayer, who has just stepped down as head of the FDIC, you may have seen her interview with the New York Times Magazine a few weeks ago, as Sheila Bayer said, essentially all the bailouts have been about bailing out the bondholders. There has been no desire in this country or in others, including in Europe right now, for bondholders to take a hit on their investments. And as a result, governments have been all too willing to take over and bail out entities where there are significant bondholder interests at stake, Mike. That's really the thing that we should be concerned about. Because if entities know that they're going to be bailed out, of course, then we have what's called moral hazard, and there's going to be no way to stop these entities from taking prudent risks. Risks, yes. Prudent risks, calculated risks, risks that are going to yield returns is one kind of investment. Wild risks and huge executive salaries, that's a totally other thing.
Well, yeah,
does that make sense?
Yeah, if you privatize the profits and socialize the risk or the loss, you're certainly skewing the price structure there of those stocks as well. And I think it comes down to a fundamental question of of government, and I don't believe that the free market is fundamentally free. I think that's why I think government has a place, is because eventually in any industry, a competitor will dominate, and at that point, the free market ceases to be free, and that competitor uses their market power to put other competitors out of business. And frankly, go ahead.
The market may be free to some degree, but what it's not is accurate. And the reason it's not accurate is, again, to go back to what I've been talking about. The tax code has caused investment to be skewed, and it's caused certain entities in our economy to be favored through subsidies and others to be biased and penalized through certain taxes. And also, the gutting of regulations in this country has also, furthermore, caused free market results to be skewed. So we have to have a country that's going to have proper regulations. And to me, the Republican line that they want control of the economy and they want no regulations makes absolutely no economic sense. It doesn't only make no sense, it makes no economic sense. And they believe that regulations have no part in the economy and that regulations have no economic function. It's totally the opposite. Regulations in this country and in any country have a very specific economic purpose, Mike. And the purpose of regulations is to form a free market. It's to form a market that has definition to it and has the ability for market participants to make investment and know to a greater degree what the outcome is going to be. Does that make sense?
When is the last time there's been any antitrust action? I mean, too big to fail used to mean too big to exist.
Yeah, there's not much of it. The Obama administration has gone back to bringing a few antitrust suits, but we're not seeing a lot of it. You're right. Mike, great to have you. Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Okay, next up on line five is going to be Ralph. Ralph, welcome to the New Capital Show.
How you doing? I might be going off track a little bit, but one thing I wanted to ask or share with you is that I voted for Obama. I supported his policies and I'm a Democrat, and I guess I don't like to call myself a liberal, more of a progressive. But one thing that disturbed me from the get-go in the Obama administration was the makeup of his economic advisors, people like Geithner and Summers and Bernanke. It just seemed to me that he was bringing in folks from Wall Street to police Wall Street, and I don't know, that conflict seems so glaring, and I think it's part of the reason why some of the policies that have been enacted to help our economy, particularly help us out of this terrible slump, have not worked. What do you feel on that? And I guess also if you could speak to the Republican notion of starting the beast and if you think that makes any economic sense. Thanks.
Ralph, monetary policy and fiscal policy are two different things. And And Bernanke has repeatedly said, and I agree with him, that, you know, you can only expect monetary policy to do so much. Remember, Bernanke's not in charge of making capital allocation. I say that until recently. Of course, starting in 2008, the Fed has actually directed massive amounts of capital into markets that were distressed, mortgage markets and money markets. But those have really been sort of rescue operations. I don't think the Fed has intentionally gone out to try to say, well, we're going to direct the Fed's balance sheet into these areas because we think these are great investments. That's really not been the Fed's purpose here. So monetary policy, I agree with Ben Bernanke, can only do so much. And I don't think that the problems that our country faces are primarily monetary in nature. I think they are fiscal in nature. You know, we need to save. We need to quit wasting. And it goes down to the very individual private level in each of our households. You know, when we're wasting vast amounts of food, or we're wasting material and not recycling, and we're wasting natural environments, and we are we're wasting people, and we're wasting young minds in inner cities. That's uneconomic behavior, and there is a tremendous amount of waste, Ralph. To me, that's where the focus on getting the country on track needs to be. And people who focus on the Fed, it's fine to focus on the Fed, but we're not going to solve our problems through a focus on monetary issues. We've got to solve our problems through a focus on what I consider to be economic issues. There's nothing scientific here. Everybody knows what economic behavior is. You know, waste is bad, and using and utilizing things and saving is good. These are basic principles that our country needs to get back to, Ralph. What do you think?
Well, I'm a teacher, and so I see things through the lens of education and young people, and I really have a hard time with, and I teach here in Texas, and I really have a hard time making sense of drastic cuts in education as a means of lowering, or means of balancing a budget, when our state ranks so low when it comes to just about every indicator of economic progress or of educational progress. I just don't get that. I mean, it seems to me that you would want to overcompensate in terms of investing in education because that's...
Well, Ralph, you would... Sorry you to interrupt, but you would be wrong if education was a poor investment. You would be wrong. But most studies... And really, it's apparent to most people that education is a very high returning investment. And so I would be prepared to agree with you.
I wish you would talk to our governor and some of the folks in Austin.
The governor's not going to talk.
Well, I know.
Not going to talk to me.
He's too busy trying to decide whether he's going to run for president. But
he's got a prayer meeting coming up in early August, and he's going to pray for guidance. But we're not. We're going to think about what we need to do for the future. Ralph, great to have you. Thanks for the call.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Okay, we've got about 10 minutes left in the show, and holding next is going to be line one, our friend Tag. Tag, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Nice that you would take some time from your vacation to do the show, Leo. really shows your dedication to KPFT and this.
Tag, episode. I love you. I tell you all the time, I love you guys.
Yeah, well, you're great, and the feeling is mutual. I have a 75-year-old lady who's a customer of mine, and her budgetary problems kind of reminds me of what's going on in Washington, and. So, you know, with this war effort that we have going on, it reminds me of, she's got a cat that's got cancer, and she'll go out and, spend $200-$400 at a pop to try to save this cat that's got cancer. And, she's got $600 a month income. You know what I'm saying? And she's got care credit for her cats and her animals. And she just continues to try to save this cat. And I feel so bad because what can you say to somebody in that situation? You know, the cat's going to die. You have to, you know, decide at some point to stop putting money into that cat, you know?
Listen, Tag, it's not for me to and you to say that, you know, she shouldn't spend on her cat. But I will say that your comments bring to mind a very important article that I read the other day. It was, from David Brooks. who I think is really doing stupendous work these days in the New York Times. David Brooks talked about the fact that many of our problems in the healthcare arena may be related to the fact that we are afraid to die. And that when we get to end of life, and of course all this was discussed during the healthcare debate and the healthcare law overhaul, but when we get to the end of life, we are doing entirely too much to keep people and maybe other organisms, as you bring up cats, alive rather than allowing people to die peacefully, painlessly, with dignity, and in due course. And who knows, that may be the case, that we would be a lot better in this country if we simply came to terms with the idea of death. We are all going to die, and when that time comes, we should be accepting of that, and we shouldn't be scrambling and fearful and trying to avoid what is the inevitable outcome of life. Death is a part of life. Anyway, very interesting article by David Brooks, and your comments very much bring that to mind. And I think echo what Brooks is saying.
And the main thing I wanted to say is that, you know, this war effort, you know, is money that we're spending that we don't have, and we continue to want to spend that money, and there's no return on it. We're not getting anything back from this war effort. And so, you know, to me, it just reminds me of this lady putting money into this cat that she doesn't have the money. She's done the reverse equity on her house and taken all that money out, and she just doesn't seem to understand that it's a losing battle. She's just going to end up hurting herself greatly by continuing to put money into that. And we're doing the same thing with the war effort. We don't have the money. It's not paying off. And we really need to take a good look at that. So with that, Leo, I'll pass. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks to have you, Tech. I think it's a great metaphor and a great description. Not great. It's an appropriate metaphor, an appropriate description. And I'm prepared to agree with you on the military expenditures in this country. I think we have many, many people who are deluded and simply do not understand the amount that is being spent. I think increasingly they are. We're starting to see conservatives and people like Ron Paul, who are running for president for the Republican Party. Ron Paul, by the way, announced that he's going to step down after this term from Congress so that he can focus on his run. And I think Ron Paul's the kind of person who brings a fresh perspective, a badly needed fresh perspective, to a Republican Party where in many segments, if not most segments of that Republican Party, there is extraordinary denial about the military expenditures. Again, upwards of $1 trillion a year, and tag, as you point out, for very, very little in return. Yes, there is return going to certain defense contracting companies, and it also helps employ many of our young people, but I would much rather see our soldiers come home and be put to work building wind power farms and wind turbines and solar panel farms and new urban transit options and trains between cities. You know, you and I know what an America of the future could look like. We know how amazing it could be. And I would rather those soldiers who have skills that are incomparable be doing that work here rather than elsewhere. Nothing against Afghans, nothing against Iraqis, but I'd like to see our guys come home and do the work here. Just a few minutes left. And next, let's see, it's going to be Matt on line 4. Matt, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hi. Well, I have to say that I agree with Mike's earlier views, but I wanted to touch on something else, which was just simply there was an impressive article about how flush our economy would be if only we retained tax rates at the level set during the Reagan administration. Do you recall any discussion on this matter? I'll take your answer offline.
Okay. Thanks, Matt. There are any number of ways that we could get to surpluses in our deficits, any number of ways. There is plenty of money. That's, you know, when they say we're bankrupt, the U.S. is not bankrupt. Remember, the credit worthiness of this country is based upon two things, the willingness to pay, or rather repay, and the ability to repay. We have the ability to repay. This country has, remember, what is the wealth of this country represented by? What is the source of it, rather? The source of it are our oceans, our fisheries, our timber, our mineral wealth, the wealth of our mines and engineering. All of these things are the source of our wealth, and we have that in abundance. The question for our country is, how are we going to write our capital allocation through our tax code and through our regulations? That's the big question. And it looks like John Boehner and President Obama are wrestling with this, whether they're going to come up with something that's a first crack at it. But, my friends, we are going to be at this project for a long time to come, because the thing has gotten so out of whack that the results are obvious. So I agree. I agree with what Matt is saying. There's really no problem getting this stuff paid for. It's reallocating our payment systems. That's the big trick right now. Okay, let's go now to Johnny on line two. Our friend Johnny, as always. Johnny, welcome.
I'll make this quick because I know you're running low on time. I have two quotes for you. One is from December of 2000. If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier, just so long as I'm the dictator.
And then Hang on, say it again. Yeah, right. Okay.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier, just so long as I'm the dictator. That's what Bush said. And then 7 months later, in July of 2001, he said in Rome, Italy, "I know what I believe. I will continue to articulate what I believe, and what I believe is right." Now, that's the key operative word is belief. Okay? Yeah. You were trying to balance out something that John said earlier, saying 10 years ago, comparing that to the current day, which it's a lot more hopeful. Well, I have to respectfully disagree, because that's the problem. Decision Points was written as his revisionist denial of the fact, of reality, of his administration. And what you're seeing now, on the political discourse on TV carried out on MSNBC and other media, is this denial, this refusal to deal with evidence and reason, verifiable historical fact. It's easier for them, it's intellectually easy for them to articulate belief. Stuff that has incomplete knowledge, unquestioning acceptance, things that have an absence of proof, not supported by reason. So things haven't gotten any better. Matter of fact, it's getting worse. So
Johnny,
Barack Obama better get together with his White House lawyer and prepare to do that declaration of raising the ceiling independent and challenge the Supreme Court. Say, yeah, you don't like it? Do something about it. That's the one time I will agree with Bill Clinton, as scary as Bill Clinton and his family is. Have a great day.
Johnny, great to have you. Thanks, and you're the last call of the day. As always, it's great to have you. Folks, that does it for another edition of the New Capital Show. It has been my pleasure to be with you. I hope that you will all stay cool in Houston, Texas. I'm headed to the Atlantic Ocean Beach. I want to thank Doyle very much for engineering the show remotely. He did a great job on that. I want to thank Brian Morris here in Cape Cod for helping me in his studio here. It's really been a pleasure to meet him and to come to his studio and do the show and meet all kinds of people that I'm doing here in Cape Cod. I will be back, well, I don't know, maybe next week. We'll see. Until then, I hope you will take care and stay tuned. Up next is the KPFT Local News. This has been the New Capital Show.
Hi, I'm Sam Gonzalez from the Sharptown High School Broadcasting Program.
I'm Victoria Oluwole.
I'm Gloria Johnson.
I'm Darnell Anderson.
AFS is a worldwide nonprofit organization that has been leading international high school student exchange for more than 60 years.
Each year, AFS USA welcomes 2,500 international high school students who come to study in U.S. high schools and live with host families.
We are looking for families in the Houston area to become host families to students arriving in August.
To learn more about hosting for the 2011-2012 school year, visit afsusa.org/hostfamily.
This has been a public service announcement brought to you by the Broadcast Journalism Program at Sharptown High School.
This is KPFT Houston.
Take the square root of 625 and you get 25. 25 is a number, as in the silver anniversary of the Watermelon Dance Summer Social. The Last Concert Cafe, located at 1403 Nance Street, is proud to present this KPFT benefit on July 30th, beginning at 5 o'clock. This year's lineup includes Lisa Novak, Jimmy Lee Dean Band, Richard Cagle and the Voodoo Choir, Zentropy, McAdams, Drum, Hightailers, Pot Roast, BMC, and at midnight, a special surprise. The admission fee is $15 for one. Bring a friend, receive a discount, $25 for two. Door proceeds benefit KPFT. For more information, dial 713-226-8563. See you on Saturday, July 30th. So don't think twice, just think silver. And remember, watermelon, the other.